Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Now that heart is beating fast, and that's the rhythm I can dance to. I'm mighty glad I've got a chance to, that one big heart that's beating fast. Tomorrow morning let it rain, tomorrow morning let it pour. Tonight we're in the groove together.
Well.
Ain't gonna worry
about. Nope, it's not Radiophone Week for us, it'll be next week. And I need to raise $1,000 during the hour, which will be relatively simple because we've had extraordinary guests come through the studio in the last 12 months, and I expect you to ring up if you want the program to continue. 3CR doesn't rely on government grants to survive. It doesn't rely on the corporate sector. It doesn't rely on advertising. So it only leaves you. And the good thing to remember is that you can get a legal, legitimate tax deduction. Put Gina to shame. Put Rupert to shame. Donate to the 3CR Radio Fund. Now, I've just been told I've got a special co-host next week who used to be big at 3CR but is now a feather duster. But the feather duster is coming back. We won't tell you who it is. Now, I've got a problem. I walk in, two guests. Could you believe that? Two guests. None of them knew they were going to be interviewed. They thought they were talking about politics or something. I don't know what they're going to talk about. So we've had to split them. And they've written a name on a piece of paper. And I'm going to open up this piece of paper and I'm going to look at the name, and that's the human being we are going to talk to. Not interview. And the other one will act as security. Yeah, we need security. I think there's a mad woman outside in the corridor. Is that the woman with the dog? Whee! All right, Radical Australia, Joseph Toscano hosting. Our special guest is Eleanor Coffey.
Hello. Thanks for having me. For this interview, I'm very prepared for.
Yeah. Could you tell the crazy woman outside to shut up? All right. Now, Eleanor, look, I'm sorry. It was a misunderstanding.
That's okay.
You've got security. You're safe. I've been defanged. This is not that type of interview where we try to humiliate you, although some listeners would disagree. It's not the type of interview where we're going to, you know, look at the deep, dark secrets of your past. We're not that interested, to be honest. I mean,
good.
You could have watched, was it Channel 7 or something, with that stupid man and that woman, but we don't. So we don't go. This is basically, we try to find out what makes an activist. What makes an activist? Give activism a little bit of a human dimension. Could you believe that?
Sure.
You can.
Yeah.
You can believe that. You'd believe anything, wouldn't you?
Yep.
All right. Now, we only asked two questions. You don't have to take notes.
Oh,
it's all
just
right.
Just doodling.
You don't need to doodle. You don't need to doodle. Just relax. A lady came in last week. Irene came in last week. She had heaps of notes, which we threw out the door. She was 80. She said she needed notes. She didn't need notes. She was a brilliant interview. You'll be a brilliant interview. You've got a dog on your top. You'll be well.
That I do.
Yeah, but it's got no tail. It's been docked.
Oh, true.
A docked dog. That's not a good beginning.
Oh no,
is it?
I didn't realise.
No. All right. We only asked two questions. The first one takes 10 seconds. The other one takes 55 minutes to answer.
Cool. What's number one?
Just to orientate listeners, what year were you born?
1989.
How could you have a life if you're born in 1989? You're not even 30.
No, I'm not. I'm 2 years off.
You're 2 years off. 1989. Things must have gone seriously off the rails for you to be an activist.
Well, yeah.
1989.
Yep.
Now, has security got a gun? He's not going to shoot me, is he? Because I've got my back to security.
I think he's all right.
I think he's all right.
Yeah.
Because he's going to be interviewed next.
Yeah, that's right. He'll get his chance.
He'll get his chance in a few weeks' time, and you can sit there and look after him. Now, the second thing is, what's the first thing you remember about being on planet Earth? You got any very early childhood memories you'd like to share?
Hmm.
Yeah, this is the great thing about live radio. We just
probably, wait. Yeah. Sorry, I've got to speak, don't I? I can't just drift off into thought.
Yeah.
Well, some of my earliest memories are spending time up at the farm. My grandparents had a farm out in Gippsland.
Gippsland.
And, so just memories of, like, walking through the bush. Both my parents were like, landscapers and horticulturalists, and they used to love to, you know, identify plants when we went on walks. And I've got this, well, it's a story as well that my parents tell me, so maybe it's a slightly fabricated memory. But
right, yeah, that doesn't matter. All right. Nobody knows. You're the only one who knows.
But I walked off when we were kind of on the farm, and I spotted this native grass, which I recognised, and remembered the name, and I started screaming for my parents. I was really excited. But they thought it was, you know, I'd seen a snake. Yeah, yeah, something bad had happened. They came running, and I was like, Mum, it's Microlina, which was the native grass. Microlina or something like that.
So that kind of got your boat. That.
Yeah, so I was very much. I spent a lot of time in nature.
In nature is a little busy.
Yeah.
Is that akin to child abuse?
interesting that, perspective.
Didn't they take you to Disneyland, your parents? You said that.
No.
Tell us about your grandparents. What are they doing on a farm in Gippsland?
Well, it was actually, it was kind of a hobby farm of my opa's. Mm. Yeah.
Why the name opa?
Was your father German? Because he was Dutch background. Dutch Jewish, yeah.
Dutch Jewish, yeah. Opa, right.
Yeah.
And when did he come to Australia?
He was sort of came over in kind of just after the Second World War.
Right.
When he was in his early 20s.
Right. Was he incarcerated by the Nazis?
No, they were. That's part of the family was fortunate. Him and his dad were already living in England at the time the war started.
Right.
But a lot of their family died over in Holland.
Right. So he came across. And how about your grandma? What was is your grandfather still alive?
No, he passed away last year.
What was his name?
Hartog Berkeley.
Oh, that's a great name, isn't
it?
Yeah. A wonderful name. You should be proud of that.
Yeah.
And your grandma, is she still alive?
No, she passed away when I was a teenager.
Right. And what was her name?
Margaret Berkeley. Yeah.
And what impact did they have, do you think, on you as a small girl?
Well, I mean, Opa always had a really keen, I think I can say, bullcrap detector.
Oh, right, good. I like the man.
You know, he was never afraid to call things out that he thought were rubbish, but he was also incredibly generous. And, yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I think he was actually, in a way, quite... He wasn't particularly left-wing as a young man. I think he studied economics and stuff when he was in England, but apparently my grandma was part of the Communist Party, and she was a bit more left-leaning, and she kind of influenced him in that way as well.
Was she born here or was she born overseas?
She was born here. I think she was born in Queensland.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And on a farming, with a farming family.
Yeah, she could almost be my age. A bit older, I reckon.
Probably.
About 10 years older.
Probably.
Because I was born in Queensland and I know what it was like.
Yeah.
And I think I knew every member of the Communist Party. So if she was in Queensland in the 60s and 70s, I may have met her.
Yeah, well, I think she probably would have already moved to Sydney or Melbourne by then. She was working as a journalist with Women's Weekly.
Was she? Right.
Yeah.
Right. And which grandparents are these? Which side?
So this is on my mum's side.
On your mum's side. How about your dad's side?
So they were in Gippsland, or my grandma was born in Adelaide. Mm. She was a seamstress. She worked in sewing factories and later as a dressmaker. Mm. And they sort of settled eventually in Mafra.
Yep, good and, on Mafra,
yep. Yeah, and my grandpa on that side I've never met. He died before I was born, but he worked in the Nestle factory or something?
Yes, Nestle, that's right.
Yeah. So that was there.
What are their names?
So Gordon Coffey and Gwen Coffey.
Ah, yeah. So that's where the coffee comes
from. Yeah, so they were Irish kind of, background.
Okay. All right, sounds all very boring so far.
Yeah, sorry.
No, that's what I'm saying. Activists come from many areas.
Didn't realise that we were going to do my family tree. It's quite interesting.
Well, it is interesting. I'm glad you find it interesting. Because if you don't find it interesting, I don't think any listener will find it interesting. The fact you're a little bit nervous, are you? All this scribbling there. You don't need to be nervous.
I'm not nervous. This is what I do when I'm on the phone or something like that. Yeah,
well, it is like being on the phone. You realise we only have two listeners.
Oh, cool.
You and me, so it doesn't really...
And our friend in the corner.
Security in the corner, yeah. I've got my back to security. I don't like security. I just feel his gaze is boring through my back. I don't know why. Do I owe him money?
Not sure.
He had that look.
He's
on
nodding.
He's nodding, I thought so. All right, so what were your parents doing in Gippsland? How did they meet, do you know?
Well, my dad moved when he was a teenager to Melbourne, mm-hmm. So that's where they met, yeah. He was working as a greenskeeper, and I think the story goes that my mum was doing pottery and she needed the grass clippings or something to help, like, keep her kiln going.
Mm, so she seemed like an interesting woman then.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah. But, yeah, they were just, you know, in the same kind of community and, right. Yeah, got to know each other.
Right. And did they move immediately to Gippsland or?
No, so dad's side of the family was in Gippsland, but they didn't stay there.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were all in Melbourne.
So all in Melbourne. Right. And you were born, you said, in 1989, was that?
Yeah, right? That's right.
1989. Here in Melbourne?
Yes, in Box Hill.
Box Hill?
Yeah.
North or south? You know, there's a difference.
Oh.
Yeah, or central.
Maybe central.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Middleborough Road. What side of Middleborough Road?
Oh, my God. I was really young. I pretty much grew up in Blackburn South, which is just up the road.
Yeah, it is just up the road. Yeah. You would have been Box Hill North.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't look like a Box Hill South person to me.
They got a
swagger about them, which you didn't have when you walked into the studio.
Okay.
They think they own the universe. Now we've alienated every Box Hill South listener. But that's all right.
How many of those?
Three.
Yeah, cool.
On a good day.
Yeah.
Usually none. So you got any brothers and sisters?
I've got one sister mm-hmm. who's 25. Mm-hmm. No, probably younger than that, 22.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Don't worry about the door, it's all right.
Yep, all good.
There's ghosts everywhere, don't worry about the door. Yeah.
Yeah, just the one sister.
One sister, okay. So this interest in grass, or grasses I should say,
mm-hmm.
How comes a little tacker, you're out in the granddad and grandma's farm, and you see this grass and you get all excited. What indoctrination led to that?
Oh, definitely my parents.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thoroughly indoctrinated into, you know, identifying plants and vegetable gardening and all that kind of stuff.
Vegetable gardening.
Yeah. So they were just into gardening.
Did you have a vegetable garden?
Yeah,
we did. Did you? I remember the first plants I ever planted were radishes. What did you plant?
I remember a lot of corn, a lot of potatoes, tomatoes, right. Beans, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
You sound a little bit way out, your parents.
Yeah, well, sure, I don't know. I mean, my mum was, like, relatively unconventional, you know, for people in the area, like, right. You know, being a bit of a feminist, not shaving her legs and
you're
not
kidding.
Dyeing her hair and...
You're kidding.
Yeah, I know, right? Crazy.
That's unheard of. Well...
In that community it was,
You weren't living in Box Hill then, were you?
No, that was Blackburn South.
Oh, right. That wouldn't be on.
No.
Everybody would be shaving.
Oh, totally. Dyeing their hair.
And if they had Botox in those days, they'd be using Botox.
Yep.
Yeah. So how'd you get on with the neighbours?
Pretty well. I mean, you know, my parents are kind of friendly people and they were always up for, like, giving people advice about their yards. And so we had good neighbours.
Yeah, everybody used to have yards in those days, didn't they?
That's it.
Yeah, front and back.
Front yards.
And back.
Yep, both of them.
Well, you see Melbourne today, there's a lot of people that wouldn't know what grass is.
Well, that's it.
You know.
Let alone a veggie garden.
I was actually excited last week. I actually saw some artificial grass in the city, in the CBD. Mm. On a friend's veranda, and I said, what's that for? And he said, oh, it's to remind me what real grass looks like. Mm. And I said, well, why can't you plant a bit of real grass?
That's bleak.
That is bleak, and I thought this person should know better. So did you go to preschool, anything like that?
Yeah, I went to kinder.
Kinder?
Yep.
Any moments you'd like to share?
Not really?
Bit boring, was it?
I don't know. What? Can't remember much, you know.
Yeah, Blackburn South, a little bit white bread land
pretty,
in those days, don't
pretty
you?
Much, yeah.
All right. And did you go to primary school?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Well, you weren't homeschooled.
No, I wasn't.
It sounds like
I went to just a local public school.
Local. What, Blackburn South?
Orchard Grove Primary School.
Orchard Grove?
Is that familiar?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
That's quite nice.
Yeah, it was a good school.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you excel at anything?
I quite liked art.
Art, yeah.
I was quite creative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your mother, mother's responsible for that, isn't she?
Yeah, with the pottery. And
did you actually sell any pottery? Did
I don't
you sell
know.
Pottery?
No, I don't know.
You're not sure.
It didn't become a career. So.
Wasn't a career.
No.
So, yeah. All right. So, how about sport in primary school?
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, I was pretty nerdy. Like, I wasn't one of the cool kids. I was never picked first or anything, but
right.
I liked being active.
Right.
Yeah, I liked netball and basketball and
all those
like
things.
Yeah.
Did the end of primary school, anybody say, Eleanor, you've got a talent here, or
For sport?
Or anything?
Oh, no.
No? Yeah. Oh, this is a fascinating interview.
Yeah. This is
scintillating. You do the whole of primary school. You weren't expelled?
No, I wasn't expelled.
No.
It was pretty normal.
Yeah,
I was a little bit, I don't know.
What?
I didn't really fit in. I spent a lot of time kind of hanging out in the art room by myself.
Why is that?
I don't know. It was sort of a certain point where there were lots of cliques at the school. Lots of people were kind of a bit exclusive. I mean, for crying out loud, there was even a group of girls who called themselves the popular group.
The popular group.
Yeah. And I wasn't it.
You weren't in the popular group.
I wasn't in it.
Well, you weren't in any group.
No.
You were just.
No.
You were ostracised to the art room.
Hanging out with the teachers, you know.
Hanging out with the teachers. Oh, teacher's pet.
So. Yeah,
Did you excel in any form of art?
Well, when I got to high school, I really enjoyed photography.
All right. Yeah. All right. So where did you go to high school?
Forest Hill College.
Forest Hill. Yeah, okay. All right. What year was that you started?
Oh, my God.
I don't think God's going to help you.
Maybe it was like 2003 or 2 or something.
Yeah. How did you feel about going to Forest Hill College to high school?
Yeah, I mean, we had a look at a couple of the local public schools, and I liked that they had lots of art facilities and, like, you know, tech, because it was an old technical college.
Yep.
So there was kind of good stuff in that regard, and yeah.
But were your parents pushing you in one direction or another?
Not
or?
Really. No. Yeah.
Perfect parents.
Yeah, they were awesome. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Let me make choices. And
so here you are, you're an activist, and we'll learn about that soon. And
we're going to talk about that.
Well, we will eventually. I just want to show that normal people, and you're exceptionally normal
I'm
today.
I'm so normal, I'm
exactly.
sorry.
Exactly. You have been normal. We want to find out when you fell off the rails, but we'll sort that out in a minute. All right. So, because going to high school, you can reinvent yourself. You don't have to be the little girl sitting in the art room with the teachers anymore. Did you find that? Were you able to reinvent yourself, or were you still a loner?
Well, at a certain point, I think, you know, I tried pretty hard to fit in, and that was just never going to happen for me.
Why? What do you think?
Well, I really don't know. If I could have worked it out, I would have been able to fit in, and I might have been on a very different
tangent.
Life trajectory than I am now.
Were you a bit too serious for people?
Potentially. You know, I was a bit anxious and a bit whatever. But at a certain point, I just decided I didn't care anymore, and I was just going to pursue my own interests.
Right.
And just sort of, develop myself. And funnily enough, when I stopped caring, it became a lot easier to relate to other human beings.
Yeah, you found the key to
That's
life.
It, yeah.
Don't care about anything or
Don't
anybody.
Don't care about anything.
And you'll be fine. So did you excel at anything at high school?
I quite enjoyed psychology. That was
psychology.
Something that I really enjoyed studying.
It's a bit of a worry. You're going to interview me next.
I already am.
I know. People have tried and failed. Psychology.
Yeah, yeah.
What interested you in psychology?
Well, I guess one thing was that at my school, I don't know if it had a particularly high incidence of, like, severe mental health problems, but there were quite a few people and friends of mine who were really, really, really struggling, and I wanted to understand that and, why that happens and how people can be helped.
These are your friends?
Yeah, friends and people I knew.
So you're what, 14, 15,
yeah.
16, you know, 13 and all that, and you're surrounded by people of... You've got significant health issues, mental health issues. Yeah, how did you feel about that?
I mean, it was pretty full on, to be honest. Mm. Yeah. I don't know how much I can really talk about it.
No.
Yeah.
Were there suicide attempts?
Yeah, stuff like that.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
How did you deal with that personally?
Well, I don't know. I think I had the kind of sense of character where I took on way too much responsibility for things.
Right.
And I also felt that the teachers and the, you know, people there, I mean, they were doing the best that they could, but they were so under-resourced.
Yep.
And so there was not much trust in them either.
Right.
So that was probably pretty bad for me as a young person to have that much sense of responsibility for the people around me.
So what, you took on that responsibility?
Well, I felt it, yeah.
Or did people kind of gravitate towards you?
I think that happened a bit as well.
Because they knew you cared.
Yeah.
Although you pretended not to care.
Yeah.
No, you did. You did.
Yeah,
that is a lot of stress for a young woman, any young person, to have to be dealing with people around them who've got major issues.
Yeah.
And did they get any type of assistance outside the school? Or was it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always hard with certain folks, you know, obviously they don't have trust in adults. And,
no.
You know, so that was hard as well. And there were a few counsellors at the school who kind of did what they could, but, there was not enough
right.
support really.
Mm. And
but luckily these people have sort of since kind of pulled through.
Yeah.
But yeah, at the time it was a bit dicey.
Did you talk to your parents about it, or was that something you
kept yourself? I think they knew.
And did psychology give you any insight into human behaviour?
Well, it did to some extent, but it was interesting. Like, at about the same time that I started getting interested in psychology, I was reading about different philosophies, and I got quite interested in Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I was quite interested in, you know, the things that we can do internally to help with our own, you know, mental well-being and stuff like that. But it wasn't until later that I sort of started to see that's incomplete, and actually a lot of the root causes for mental health problems are social and cultural and economic and environmental as well.
Mm. You don't think there's a genetic component?
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
But I don't think that people would be pushed into having severe mental health problems if there wasn't also some kind of environmental factor as well.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense. So, you're struggling with all this as basically a teenager.
Yeah, apparently.
Well, you did. Well, you just told us you did. Unless
well, I was thinking about that stuff, yeah. Mm. I mean, I guess, yeah, I didn't think about the broader social stuff until probably my early 20s.
Right, but going back, but let's go back to high school.
Yeah.
There you are, you're 14, 15, you're trying.
I keep wanting to get out of high school.
Well, you're not
getting out. I don't want to go back there.
Well, you know, I know. You reinvent yourself three times
that's
in life.
It,
when you leave primary school, when you leave high school, and when you get divorced or separated. You know, that's
true.
When people say, all right, let's go back to high school, because I don't think many people really understand how much angst there can be for young people in that type of setting.
Yeah. Yes, there is a lot of angst.
Yeah, as you grow up. Buddhism.
Yeah.
Was it any particular Heinz brand? You know, there's 57 Heinz brands of every religious faith.
Oh, for sure. So many.
Is there any particular brand you looked at?
Or? Well, early on I was just reading stuff on the internet and in books and, you know, pretty much anything. Mm. But later on I gravitated towards, Japanese Zen Buddhism.
Mm. Why? Yeah.
Well, I think one reason was that there was a meditation teacher at my university. He was a South African monk, actually.
Right.
And he started a sitting group there, and I just really got into it then.
That was later on.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So considering all these issues, you obviously graduated from high school because you went to university.
I did.
How'd you go?
What do you mean?
At the end.
At the end of high school.
Well, did you have lots of choices
or
a limited number of choices? I mean, I'm not asking your exact mark. That would be very rude because you're young and there's people out there who would still remember.
But
I'm just saying, I just ask people where they've had choices.
Yeah, well, I knew that I didn't know exactly what I wanted to study. I wanted to explore psychology, but I wanted to study other things. So I was just basically looking at a straight-up Bachelor of Arts degree and I managed to get the marks to get into Monash Uni.
Monash Uni.
Yeah. So.
And what subjects did you do?
So I majored in psychology and Japanese.
And Japanese.
Yeah.
Good combination.
Just anybody a wild else? Card. I never studied it before, but I thought, why not?
Konnichiwa.
Konnichiwa.
Yeah. How's your Japanese?
It's pretty bad these days, yeah.
Have you been to Japan?
I have, yeah.
All right, we'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah.
Okay. So you went to Monash. How many years were you there?
Oh, too many. I studied kind of part-time and did that whole thing. Yeah, why? Just kind of dragged it out. I could never really deal with the stress of full-time study, and I had to work at the same time anyway. So.
Well, haven't you got rich parents like the Turnbulls?
Oh, yeah, well, that would be nice, but...
You mean you had to work while you were going to university?
Yes, I did. I couldn't just get my parents to buy me a house, so...
And you couldn't even get them to pay your fees up front? They couldn't get... What type of parents are they?
Just normal ones.
Exactly. I think people say, well, why don't your parents help you? All right, so how long... So what were you doing? What type of work were you doing?
Oh, so I worked doing before and after school care.
Right.
So I was working with kids.
So did your psychology interests kind of help you with that?
Oh, I guess so. You guess so? I don't know. So, you learn a bit about childhood development. It was probably my many years of babysitting experience that helped more with that, to be honest.
Were you one of these babysitters who used to get $10 for the night? right. You were gold when I had kids. I mean, you would have been gold. It's difficult finding good 14-year-old babysitters who'd accept $10 a night. You were one of them, were you?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. All right, getting back to... I'm interested in the Japanese because I've been to Japan a few times.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so when did you go to Japan?
When?
Yeah.
Well, the first time was with my parents just for a couple of days.
Yeah.
And then when I was studying Japanese at uni, I got into an accelerated program where you did a homestay for 2 months. So I actually lived with a family.
Where in Japan?
In Kanazawa.
Kanazawa. Where's that? Which island?
It's on the... I think the North Island, but
what,
it's sort
Hokkaido?
Of... It's no, no, it's Honshu? Just... I'll just say, so, like, you know where Osaka is? It's on the west coast. It's like 3 hours by train north
wonderful.
Of Osaka.
Yeah. That is Japan.
Yeah, it was great. It's like a bit of a fishing town and, like, quite a, you know, fairly sized city, but it was awesome.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah.
So what was it like living in such small quarters?
Do you mean, like, the house? Or?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, my family was lovely. Yeah. They were great. They had one grown-up son who I never saw.
Right.
Who was just playing mahjong and kind of hanging out. I had my own little room and, you know, she made my host mum made me breakfast every morning and it was really sweet. And they took me out and introduced me to their friends. They were a particularly active host family. They used to organise things for all the other kids as well. And, they were awesome. And
what was your Japanese like?
It was kind of intermediate at that stage. My host family didn't speak any English at all. Some of the other students went to ones that did, so I had to kind of just deal with it.
Right.
So it was great for learning.
Yeah. Did you have to roll up your futon every day or not?
No, no, I actually had a Western-style bed.
You had a Western-style bed?
I think I was the only one in the house who did.
Yeah, I think so. You must have got the guest room.
Yeah, well, they had a special room for host kids, so.
Yeah, wouldn't have had much of a garden either.
No, really just a little bit out the front, like nothing really.
Not really,
just one of these little box houses.
Yeah. And what do you think of the West Coast? What do you think of the scenery and the... Did you see the sea there? Any of the sea?
Yeah, we did go out to the sea. Mm. We went out to, just do a bit of sightseeing with the group It's so beautiful. I mean, I love Japan.
It's extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah, really stunning.
Yeah, I think we spent a number of months there with my late wife. We actually... went to Hagi.
Yeah, right. Where's that?
Up north. It's a special pottery village.
Oh, cool.
They've done that for centuries.
Nice.
But they got a special brand of pink pottery because of the clay they've got there.
Okay.
So you should have gone to Hagi.
Yeah. Next time, maybe.
Next time. You like travelling?
Yeah, I do. I haven't for a while just because of work and, you know, money and stuff.
All right. Look, it's 4:31. This is Radical Australian Community Radio 3CR. We're interviewing somebody who's actually exceptionally interesting. We do only have an interesting guest. She did bring her own security guard with her because she's a bit of a star out there in the real world. Her name is Eleanor Coffey, Coffey. Hey, my son... When he was 16, he spent a year in Germany, right, at a soccer training school. And he was in the same room as a young prince or something from Saudi Arabia.
Mm.
And his personal security guard slept in the bedroom with them.
Oh, my God.
So I assume he doesn't sleep in the bedroom with you, does he?
No.
Oh, thank God for that. All right. Okay. Let's continue. All right. You said, what type of work are you doing today?
At the moment. Mm. So at the moment I'm cleaning. I'm actually working in a worker-owned cooperative that...
Excuse me?
Excuse me?
excuse me, did you use a dirty word? Did you use a filthy word? Did you talk about the
first?
No, cooperative.
Owned?
Owned. Did you... hang on, I'm a bit...
Help me out, Joe. What's going on?
I'm feeling a bit sick here. As you know, there are only two types of employment in the universe.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Public employment and private employment.
Oh.
You're not part of this new wave, old-fashioned movement that's kind of reasserting itself in the community of people getting together,
mm-hmm.
forming their own association or cooperative and collective, and actually sharing the profits. You're not telling me that, are you?
I'm sorry, Joe.
When did this happen?
Well, it takes a while, but it's been going for a while.
But when did all this happen? Here we are. Nice young girl, leaves high school, does her arts degree.
Where did it go wrong?
What happened? When did you come across these stupid ideas?
Oh, dear. Well, the answer to that question, I met someone at uni.
Right.
I actually was in Japan before that. I stayed at a monastery.
Right.
And I got really into that whole thing. It was this sort of amazing community where they farmed, and I was there for 4 months, and I came back to regular civilization.
What year was this?
So this was like in 2014.
You went. So your life had been pretty miserable till 2014?
It was fine, but I was just trying to, like, get good grades at uni so I could be a psychologist and just...
Did you ever complete your degree?
I got my bachelor. I never completed honours.
You never completed honours?
Yeah, I dropped out.
So you're a cleaner with an arts degree. I like that.
Yep.
All right. Now let's go back to this monastery. This interests me. How did you find out about the monastery?
I was just sitting with a group in Melbourne.
Are you just sitting there as you do? Having a coffee.
Meditating.
Meditating, right.
There was a monk there who'd been to this place in Japan.
There was a monk.
There was a monk or a priest or whatever,
what
this
type
guy.
Of monk?
He was a Buddhist Zen monk.
Right.
And he'd practiced at this place called Antaiji and was talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just knew that I had to go there. He was talking about this amazing, they do communal work and they practice together. And
What made you want to go there?
Oh, I don't know. It just sounded really intense and interesting. And I just, my gut made the decision that that's what I had to do.
You had to go to a monastery?
Yeah.
In Japan?
Yes.
you just felt that was it?
Yeah. I mean, I've been practicing for a while. Yeah, I don't know what it was. I can't describe it.
What do you mean you've been practicing? What have you been practicing?
I'd been meditating going on retreats and sitting with groups in Melbourne and
that
kind of thing.
Are you thinking or not thinking when you meditate?
Oh, both,
Both.
I don't know.
Right.
Probably thinking quite a lot. But
so. You're not supposed to think, are you, when you meditate?
Well, yeah, I mean, but how are you gonna get around that?
What,
you're gonna fight with yourself the whole time.
Well, if you're a real meditator, you wouldn't be thinking, would you?
Mm.
You're a failure.
Yes, well, it's just one of many things that I've failed at, so that's okay.
Oh, I'm really pleased you failed at it.
Yeah.
Because to me it sounds pointless.
That's it, it is pointless. That's the whole point.
What do you mean it's the whole point?
Well, I'm gonna go there.
Go there. Yeah.
So like with the school of Buddhism that I practiced in, the idea is that you sit and various things will come up, and the point is not to achieve some kind of perfect mental state. It's just to kind of open up to what's happening.
But there's nothing happening.
There's nothing happening.
Except in your mind.
Just your own thoughts and random stuff.
Yeah.
And just, you don't necessarily, you're not going to get anything out of it. It's not going to boost your ego in any way. All you're going to see is your own rubbish mind doing its kind of thing.
Running
and
around.
Yeah, that's it. And you just get to know it, and that gives you a little bit more freedom.
Why do you do it collectively? Why do you do it for other people?
Do you do it
for other people in a group?
Yeah, you usually sit in a group. You can sit on your own. I think there's something good about the spirit that gets built when there's lots of people just sitting together in a room silently.
Well, I can understand now why in 2014, when this Buddhist monk talked about something real in Japan, you said, I've got to go.
Yeah.
You would have gone mad where you were, I reckon.
I would have. I was already going mad. Uh-huh. And I went even more mad after I went and I came back.
All right.
I had this idea that going to the monastery would kind of help me be a better psychologist.
A better psychologist.
Like I would use that, the sort of skills that I got in meditation.
Right.
But I came back and I just couldn't do it. I couldn't study. I couldn't sit in front of a computer anymore.
I'd had
this experience of, you know, connection with other people
and
kind of the feeling of what it's like to live in a community where you're just meeting each other's needs.
Right. So somehow you're telling me that the real world is better than the virtual world? Are you trying to tell me that? Really?
Oh, I don't know, Joe.
That's profound. That is profound. Let's get back to the monastery.
All right.
All right. So what? You just caught a plane? Or did you have
pretty
to
much.
Organise it or anything?
Well, I worked a bunch of, you know, pretty crappy jobs, saved up the money and wrote them a letter and said, you know, please have me. And they were like, sure.
Sure.
And, yeah, I went for 2 months during the rice planting time and then came back for another 2 months for the harvest.
So what did you do during the rice planting time?
Planted rice.
Rice. Yeah. So I knew you were going to say that. But tell us about what is the process? Because you didn't do it with a machine,
no,
did you?
No,
like
didn't.
They do here.
I mean, they did have like one tractor, but there was a lot of manual labour.
Yeah.
Like I got muscles for the first time at that place.
Were you wading in water? And
So I was on the rice planting team, so I spent a lot of time walking with my gumboots through thick mud, building, like carrying mud from to try and flatten the field. We had to flatten it by hand so the water would be at the right level. And like building up the sort of dams around it, and
you didn't
and
have to
taking rocks out of it by hand and pushing them out with wheelbarrows.
Did it ever cross your mind you're just cheap labour?
Yeah, that's essentially what you are. Like
you don't
pay to stay there, but they'll bring in new people
at
that time of year because they need the extra help. But then they feed you, so that's
you
cool.
get fed, and you get a roof over your head.
That's it.
Which you share. You share a room, I see.
You do. You have a roommate.
Now. Harvest, that sounds really fascinating. Because, you know, I've been to Japan and I've seen people harvest and I've been there a long time. So how did you harvest?
So we had a combination of one barely working machine, which someone would kind of try to push around and it would kind of grab, because all the rice is sort of planted in a bundle.
Mm-hmm.
So it would grab these bundles and kind of tie them off and drop them. And then there were just us out there with little kind of scythes, cutting and
gathering. So you're doing it traditionally.
Yeah.
Develop good shoulder muscles. Good shoulder muscles.
Yes.
You realise that's the best rice in the world.
Oh.
And it's protected.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was pretty awesome to do all that and then eat the first bowls of rice that kind of came out of the harvest.
All right. So what did you learn from that experience?
I think it wasn't something intellectual. It was more of a feeling of like, you know, kind of how it feels to be really supported. Like, there was this feeling of, I knew what I had to do. I knew what my work was. And, you know, if I just kept doing that, then I would be able to live and we'd take care of each other.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So you're part of a community.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah.
Were there couples or in the community or was it single people?
It was
people?
A funny, it was an interesting place because the abbot was German.
Mm-hmm.
So he put the website in a bunch of different languages and there were people there from all over the world.
Right.
There was kind of like interesting groups of people. I think there was a couple.
Oh, one couple, right.
But it wasn't like they were, you know,
so there was
displaying
no,
it or whatever. But
all right.
Yeah.
So you expected to be there for the community.
Yeah, that's it. The community comes first.
All right.
Yeah.
So you fly back to Australia.
Yes.
What happens?
Well, I try to go back to uni. I try to study honours. And I can't. It's just like eating dirt. Like, I just can't make myself do it.
That's right.
What? And I just get really down in the dumps, basically.
Right.
Really disenchanted because I'm seeing, you know, I kind of got a sense of why, like, you know, why so many people are anxious and depressed isn't because there's something wrong with their head. It's because they don't have meaningful work. They don't have a sense of connection to nature and each other. You know, and I think, you know, it's still important to have people who do support people with acute mental health problems or whatever, but I just didn't feel drawn to that anymore.
Right.
I wanted to be out in the world working with people.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
You didn't think that just talking was enough.
Yeah. And I guess I just realised that I didn't want to sit in a room, a fluorescent lit room, talking to people all day.
While you're looking at your computer.
Yeah.
Watching your stock market
That's
shares
it.
Go up and down.
Yeah. You know, I sort of had that experience of also doing all that physical work. And I was like, I'm a young person. You know, I can move my body well. That's great. I want to do stuff, you know.
Well, you do. So.
Yeah. So now I clean houses.
We need to go back a few steps. We need to go back a few steps because you're not working for a multinational corporation.
No.
You're not working for one of the big companies. You're not kind of, you're actually part of a workers' cooperative, which you are part owner of, because that's what a cooperative is. So how did you stumble across this weird sect?
Yes, well, a sect's a good word. So I was at uni and I met someone also in my course who was an organiser with the Earthworker Cooperative, which is an organisation that, basically aims to help support worker cooperatives, especially in sustainable industries, to get started, and with the idea of creating a network of these organisations that can support each other, provide, you know, socially and environmentally beneficial
So what you're creating, is an economy within an economy.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Cooperative sector of the economy.
Economy, that's right. Because there are, as you said, there are three mechanisms, not traditionally in Australia. I mean, there was a cooperative movement in the 1880s and 1890s, but that was due more to necessity. They weren't what you call intentional cooperative communities. So that's interesting, because in a lot of countries around the world, there is a large cooperative sector. It is an important part of the economy. I remember in 1981, before you were born, we hosted an academic from Peru to come to Australia to talk to us about the cooperative movement in Peru, which was basically a movement which evolved as a result of necessity, that people were actually forced into forming cooperatives and collectives to survive, because they couldn't get any work in the other sectors, and there was no social security net here. With a social security net, it makes it much more difficult for people to form these intentional cooperatives. So, forget about the bloody theory. I'm here to talk about security.
That's interesting.
What got you? So what? How did you make that first contact? You just turned up at a meeting, or what happened?
Yeah, well, I think it was actually my housemate also knew this person, and they started meeting at my house.
What?
Talking about some kind of housing co-op or something for students, which never got off the ground.
No,
but I started overhearing these conversations, and I was just like, this sounds good. So I started sitting in on them and eventually became an earthworker organiser as well. So
an earthworker organiser?
Yeah.
What is that?
So, just anybody who volunteers or organises for Earthworker.
Yeah, but what are you organising? Struggle? What are you organising?
Yeah, great question. I mean, usually it's a lot of writing emails and updating spreadsheets and, you know, all that great movement building stuff. But, yeah, like one of the major projects at the time, and it still is now with Earthworker, has been setting up a solar hot water manufacturing co-op in Morwell, which listeners might know about as well. So we were doing a fair bit of work around that.
So when did this little cleaning cooperative spun off the Earthworker?
Is
it part of Earthworker, or is it just an independent entity?
It is. So we're a member of Earthworker.
You're a member. An affiliate?
Yeah, an affiliate group. So of the network.
Of
all the co-ops. So I was working as a cleaner while I was volunteering for Earthworker, and one of the other organisers just basically said, have you ever thought of a cleaning cooperative? And I was like, that sounds great. And I really wanted to have, because at the moment a lot of this stuff was quite theoretical as well, you know, talking about worker co-ops and self-managing and stuff like that. And I really wanted to have an experience of what that was like for myself.
Right.
And it also seemed like a good thing to set up, because you don't need heaps of money.
It's not capital intensive.
Not capital intensive.
That's the words.
Right.
That's right. You don't have to go to the banks to borrow and they say, what collateral do you
have?
All you need is a bucket and a mop.
Yeah.
And a duster.
That's it. And I already knew you had to clean.
So how many joined the cooperative initially? How many people?
Well, what we kind of did first was Earthworker held a forum basically for people who wanted to set up cooperatives, and from that there was a handful of people who were interested in cleaning. And of that initial group, some of them were kind of more like theoretically interested in the project. They were kind of more academic sort of
folks. They were like the abbot, German abbot. They were the German abbot, the equivalent. They didn't actually want to get their hands dirty.
Yeah.
All right.
But yeah, from that, yeah, there was one guy and me who sort of kept meeting and scratching our heads for a while, and we just kept talking about it, and eventually more people got involved.
Right. So, so you are now, does this cooperative actually sustain your economic needs at the minute?
Well, we only officially launched it in February this year.
February 2018.
Yeah.
Right.
So we've been operating for 4 months now.
Mm-hmm. What, mainly through the net, or how do you operate?
Yeah, so, well, yeah, we have a website. People contact us for house cleaning mostly.
Mm-hmm. What's the website?
So it's redgumcleaning.coop.coop. Yeah.
Redgum.
Redgum, that's our name. Yeah.
Oh. Why Redgum?
Why Redgum? Looking at my...
The security.
Security guy.
Don't worry about security. He'll get his turn.
We liked the gum leaf thing because we use eucalyptus oil for cleaning. It's a great natural cleaning product.
No, you're not using nice sprays with chemicals in
them? Oh, no, we prefer to preserve our lungs.
Excuse me, your security. Do you mind?
Sorry about him.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you know, he thinks it's important. I mean, you drew straws. You drew the long straw. He drew the short straw.
Yeah.
He thinks you'll get an easy interview in a few weeks' time. No way. You'll be grilled about this red gum business, I tell you. All right. So how is it structured?
At the moment, it's flat. It's pretty flat. We've only got 5 members.
Right.
So we just meet and make any decisions that need to be made once a fortnight. And we share the kind of various roles among us on a kind of rotating basis.
Right. And does the income that comes in go into a common pool and then be divided into 5 bits? Or?
No, we just get paid wages for the hours we work.
You get paid wages?
Yeah. We pay ourselves wages.
So you pay yourself wages. Yeah. And it's based on the number of hours you do?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So the more hours you would do, the more you would income
we
you
will earn. Yes.
You will earn. Okay. Yeah. All right. So some people would accuse you of there's no need to look at the watch.
Sorry.
That's my job. Okay. I've got a big watch up there. It says 4:49.
Oh my God! I've got to be on my best behaviour.
You've got another 11 minutes of torture. Okay.
Right. I'll take the watch off. There you go.
Thank you. That's good. All right. No doodling. No watch.
Okay.
All right. This is serious, because what you're doing is revolutionary. It's been done before many times historically.
Yep.
This third phase of the economy is being developed, because people think you either work for the private sector, you work for the public sector, or you're unemployed.
Mm.
Okay? And even a lot of micro and small businesses which are self-employed, then they employ labour. They're not cooperatives, and then they pay workers a wage and, you know, take off the profit. This is a different concept. This is a different economy. And what you're trying to do, as you said, is set up a network of cooperatives which then form a society within a society.
Mm.
Because there is a revolutionary potential to a movement like this.
For sure.
And then that's what you're interested in, not just the cleaning. The cleaning is a means to an end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind cleaning, but I'm in it for the community. And
So what other cooperatives are you affiliated with?
Well, there's Earthworker, which is the organising one.
For the hot water systems,
and part of that as well is... No, so Earthworker is a separate thing. Water systems. So that's the hot water systems one is its own cooperative. It's its own factory.
Okay. Like, so is Earthworker more like a coordinating group, is it?
Yeah, something like that. It's kind of just like people who kind of help meet the needs of the network.
Right.
Yeah.
So they're like the franchisor.
Yeah.
Terrible word.
Yeah.
But they don't get any money.
No.
So what other cooperatives are involved?
That's it really at the moment. I mean, there are...
The cleaning cooperative.
Yeah, the cleaning and the manufacturing one.
Right.
But there are others sort of like in the wings.
In the wings.
That haven't started up yet.
I mean, it is a good way for people to look at things, because if they've got 3 or 4 friends who are in the similar industry, it's something that anybody can do tomorrow, especially if it's not capital intensive.
Well, that's it.
If it doesn't need a lot of money, and a lot of the service industries aren't capital intensive.
That's it, yeah.
You're basically selling your labour.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you need 5 people as a minimum to start a worker cooperative.
So are you a legal entity now?
We are.
Legal entity. Because there is the Cooperative Act, you know that?
Yes.
Yes, yes. You do all the paperwork and you become a legally recognised entity.
Took a long time.
Well, it does.
Yep.
Did you do it all yourselves, or did you need legal assistance?
We did get some support. There's a great guy, Anthony McMullen, who is part of the 888 cooperative, who does sort of like support for worker co-ops and has helped Earthworker a lot. So that was great.
You realise the big story in Victoria and Australia has been demutualisation and destruction of cooperatives.
Yeah.
That is the big story, because the dairy industry is a classic example of what happens when you destroy the cooperative nature of that type of industry. All right, so let's get back to you. So would you want to your cooperative to expand, or would you want people to set up other independent cooperatives if they're in cleaning?
I think there's room for both. Like, I think it would be good. I think we have capacity to expand a bit beyond five members. I mean, I'm not sure what the rest of the group thinks, but my personal feeling is that when cooperatives and other groups get really, really big, it's a bit harder to have that same level of engagement and democratic decision-making. So maybe there's kind of a good number for a co-op before it's better than to create another one that can be sort of semi-independent.
Well, it doesn't have to be. I mean, we're intelligent people. We've got a virtual world.
That's true. You don't have just to make an app for that.
Yeah, you'd have to be in the same room, do you?
Yeah.
Ever thought of making that app?
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm old-fashioned, but I just really like being around people.
Well, you went to a monastery. What do you expect?
Yeah.
I mean, you worked all these Japanese rice farmers for nothing.
That's it.
All right. So have you ever thought of actually expanding or not? You just it's only February, so you're stabilising.
Yeah, we definitely.
Are you making enough money for the five members to actually be financially independent?
We're almost there. We're getting there. We worked out that we probably need about 60 regular clients.
Right.
Something like that. And we're at about 35 now.
So what's the difference between a cooperative movement and a franchise movement, which has got a little bit of a bad smell about it these days?
Yeah, franchise versus cooperative. I mean, I don't know as much about franchises, but I guess the main thing is that we really own the business.
Exactly. That's the difference. A franchise, you buy a right to use a name.
Yeah, that's it, but you don't really own it.
No. And they can change the rules, which they do consistently. And so then you have to exploit your workers in order to stay above. So how is the allocation of work determined? Is it determined on your financial need for that week, or whether people's availability?
It's like availability a lot of the time. Yeah. But, like, we're also conscious of when people haven't had as much work that we share it around or whatever. But we haven't really had any. There's not that many of us, and we haven't felt like we're kind of fighting over work or anything like that. We usually work in teams of two as well.
Right.
So, you know.
What, for security or just?
Oh, just for speed, and it's kind of more enjoyable. Right. But that means there's also more people kind of out on one day.
All right, I'm going to be a bit ugly here.
Sure.
Do you think you're making more money than somebody who's employed by a cleaning contractor?
Like.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope so.
Well, no, I'm just saying. I mean, because the average wage, if you're paid award wage, is about $17
an hour. Yeah, I mean, we're paying. I mean, the fact is, like, as a startup co-op, we're still doing heaps of unpaid labour.
Right.
But when we are getting paid for our cleaning time,
right.
We're paying ourselves at the higher end of the award.
Higher end of the award.
Yeah, because we've got more responsibilities as well.
Yeah, and you've done all this in three, four months.
Yeah.
Extraordinary. So if we have any listeners out there who would like some ethical cleaners who are part of an expanding cooperative movement, how do they contact Red Gum?
Yeah, the best way to get in touch is probably through our website. So that's redgumcleaning.coop. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't even have a phone number.
We do. I just don't remember what it is.
But if they go to red.cleaning.
It's on the website.
right. And people will know that if they pay you to do the cleaning, that it'll helps the cooperative movement.
It.
Now, have you got any plans for the future?
Plans? Well, one thing we'd really like to do is develop some kind of like curriculum so to help people who want to start up their own cooperatives. And
I'm talking about you.
Oh, me?
You. Okay. This is about you.
Oh, but I don't have any dreams and ambitions beyond the co-op.
Really?
So, no.
Oh, yeah. This could be like the monastery experience. You could drop out in a few years if that's all. That's all you have.
I'm so invested, though. Yeah. Spent years.
You could set up a psychology cooperative.
Oh, God. What do I want to do?
Yeah, what do you want to do? You said you want to travel. Would you like to go back to Japan?
I might. like to do that at some point. Mm. I mean, I guess I am really focused in the midterm on, just continuing work with the cooperative. And, it's quite exciting.
It is exciting, isn't it?
Thinking about, I guess, the story of it, really. Because we're not particularly qualified people in anything. And we started this and now we're earning a wage from it.
Well, you're very qualified because you're creative. And that's the key.
But everybody's creative. So
everybody has the potential to set up a cooperative.
That's it.
Especially if they find themselves without employment.
That's it.
And you don't have to be kind of bend your knee to Centrelink every day.
That's
or,
it.
Or to an employer.
And we'd really like to see as well, the government looking at the NIS scheme, the New Enterprise Incentive Scheme, which supports businesses.
Yep.
Currently, worker co-ops aren't qualified for that because
that's
we
right.
have more than two partners.
Yeah.
So that'd be something that would really help.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Eleanor Coffey, for coming to the studio. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to see young people like you who are our future, because I'm going to need somebody to look after me in that nursing home. So hopefully you'll be able to set up a few nursing home cooperatives.
We're on it.
You're on it. And, look, it's a pleasure. It's great to see young people rediscovering a lot of old ideas. Thank you very much. All the best.
Thank you.
And we've got the next program is about to enter the studio. They're doing funny things with the...